for out of consideration, if you've got a cell phone, if you could turn it off, or at least put it on vibrate. And, you know, if you're starting up your laptops and things, maybe, you know, hit mute on that so that everybody doesn't have to hear that. And anyway, we'll start in just a sec.
Not a problem.
Okay. We want to pull. We don't want the whole afternoon to throw off.
I'm supposed to be done at what time? It's 1:30. Appreciate your interest in the area of voice security and management. Rapidly becoming an issue for classic data and network security practitioners with the advent of voice over IP. It's also been an issue for the security world for many, many years. In regards to cross-network attacks, modems and phone connections. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. Give you a perspective on all of that from the voice side of the house. Before we get started, I do want to point out that we were asked by the University of Texas San Antonio. A number of you probably were asked to participate in a little survey here and was handed this while you came in. I know my subject material is going to be terribly interesting to you, so you probably won't have time. But if you have time during the discussion, encourage you to fill out this survey and pass that to the UTSA folks. They're all right over here in the corner. They'll be at the door when you go out. It is a survey on ethics, and they just asked me to let you know that it is a set of questions that have been used across many communities nationally, and not all the questions may fit this community, and if they don't, just answer appropriately. But it is quite a few questions, but they're doing a study. It has some national interest, and so for those of you who volunteered to participate, we really appreciate it, and you can pass that to them as you leave. Okay, we're going to talk today about really security in the voice world, and this is what we're going to discuss. What happens to the security of your data network and your voice service as voice and data network services converge. And basically, we're leading up to a discussion about voice over IP and its security issues. But you'll see as I go through this, and we're running about 15 minutes short, you know, short of time, so I'm going to finish this exactly on time. So I may hurry through a couple of things here. But I'm going to spend some time up front talking about the pre-convergence voice vulnerabilities that many of you in the data network security world, though you may not be directly involved in these issues hit your network, impact the security state of your network on a daily basis. This is a really major issue, been around for a long time, but there is a solution on the market that's been out there for about 3 years called telecommunications firewalls. There are several players there. Not a lot of folks know that much about it. It sort of hit the larger IT and IT security community a few months ago. In Network Computing Magazine, they did an evaluation of one of the first two telecom firewalls in the market. You can check that out if you want to get more technical detail there. The point here is that telecommunications firewalls, which are a pretty fundamental security technology base that not many people know much about yet, also have huge implications for your migration to a secure voice service in the IP side of the house over time. So we're going to talk about all these issues. First of all, let me give you some perspective on pre-convergence vulnerabilities between both the voice and data network. In the voice arena, you clearly have three types of voice networks that are going to rapidly become intermingled within the enterprise. Every organization out there has a very large number of classic PBXs that they manage and or a Centrex service from the phone company. That's your legacy TDM, time division multiplexing network that supports most of your voice. A lot of companies are deploying some campus-level voice over IP deployments. We're going to talk about what that means and the security implications of that technology. And then we're going to talk about the ultimate direction of the voice over IP movement, which is to provide full IP telephony. When you pick up an IP phone, place a call, it's going to go out of your enterprise as an IP-formatted voice call to an IP backbone infrastructure by the telco community. And when that happens, there's a whole new layer of new services that everyone expects to be able to take benefit of for the business. And that's the ultimate promise of voice over IP. Getting from here to there over the next decade or two, And there's a lot of discussion as to how long it's going to take, but getting there is becoming a really big security and management issue for the enterprise. So let's start off by first discussing some of the fundamental issues about the legacy voice network, the TDM network, and the relative risks associated with that environment. You'll see here on the chart on the left, the classic voice issues have focused around service availability, service theft, eavesdropping on the public switched telephone network, which a lot of us tend to overlook, and then cross-network attacks. All of this stuff has been around forever. Let me give you a quick perspective. First of all, if you were to sit back and try and take a sort of a high-level view of the relative risks for these kinds of exploitations in the legacy voice network, you're going to probably, arguably, come up with something like this. This is certainly not quantified very well in some areas, but the classic issue of service availability, the risk there is fairly low. You don't see a lot of instances where people hack PBXs and take the service down. Usually, when folks go after the voice arena, their primary focus is to steal the service itself, toll fraud. In fact, previous numbers for PBX-based toll fraud against U.S. businesses for the last several years has been characterized as in excess of $12 billion a year. Now, that's not carrier toll fraud, which is much, much larger, hundreds of billions. And you see some of that dialogue going on between AT&T and WorldCom and all that now. That's been a big, long issue for a long time. But everyone has also recognized the amount of toll fraud perpetrated against small, medium, and large businesses is very, very large. I believe AT&T just recently released a report which I've not seen yet, but a lot of folks are talking about in just the last few weeks, that characterizes that PBX toll fraud in excess of $50 billion a year. And that's being bought into by several of the associations out there in the telecommunications arena. We'll see. Quantifying this is very difficult, as you'll see, but the point here is it's a serious business issue for businesses. Eavesdropping on a public switched telephone network, we've always assumed is not a really huge issue, but it is a significant vulnerability. You've seen several instances happen with, I believe, HP a year or two ago with some voicemail that was captured associated with the acquisition of Compaq and some of the furor that caused, possibly getting in the way of some business issues. I believe IBM recently just had another event where some of their executives were in what they thought was a private conference call, and it was captured in some form, not sure how, but was made public regarding their strategic move to move employment jobs out of this country into foreign countries. I don't know if you heard that on NPR the other day. So bottom line is eavesdropping on the public switched telephone network, though we have laws against that in this country, laws governing that in this country, it's not against the law to monitor phone calls, it's just a process you go through. Still, we've all assumed that was not probably a really huge issue within this country. A far more widely recognized security issue is cross-network attacks. We're going to talk about all of these to some level. First of all, the voice service availability and theft basically involves someone from the outside, usually through the public switched telephone network, getting into a PBX operating system environment itself or the voicemail system, many different ways to do that, and exploit that, the goal of which is to crash the voice service. And you generally don't see that happening too often because usually, the goal is to steal the service itself to make long-distance phone calls. A great technique for lots of reasons in the hacker community, obviously, to get some clandestine or covert connection to some other network, but also to actually get free phone calls as well. Pretty big issue. That's something the phone folks have been struggling with for years. Eavesdropping on the public switched telephone network is pretty simple. Someone makes a phone call, and someone along the line gets an opportunity to monitor that. First of all, this has been the number one operations security issue for the federal government. In fact, you can find some public reference out there to issues there associated in the Vietnam War, where pilots were actually shot down and captured because of this basic vulnerability of phone calls transversing the environment. Part of the discussion with WorldCom and some of their supposed toll fraud activity, carrier-based toll fraud activity, by routing calls outside into other national infrastructure and then coming back in, does raise a lot of interesting issues. A lot of U.S. businesses, the financial community in particular, are pretty paranoid about their voice, fax, and modem traffic transversing international communications lines. There's a lot of examples of an intent to capture that information. So this has been around for a long time. Probably on the TDM network, for the enterprise, this is not terribly easy to do. I mean, you do have to get inside a PBX environment and do some pretty nippy things in some of the PBXs to do this. There's not a lot of evidence that this occurs in large scale for a business enterprise, though it is certainly not impossible to do. Now, the cross-network attacks, authorized modems, basically, everyone assumes that we have the data network and the phone network, and we've all of us know that there's a lot of interconnectivity between those two via modem connections. We often tend to overlook those as security practitioners. In particular, authorized modem connections are there usually for remote maintenance purposes. Usually most database servers and email servers, web servers, storage devices, copy machines, for goodness sakes. The firewalls themselves, IDS systems sitting on your data network, often have a dial-up maintenance port for emergency maintenance procedures. There are hundreds of thousands, many, many millions of these connections connected into your data networks that you're currently trying to secure today. And if you were to take it upon yourself to do some serious war dialing, looking for those modem connections, you'll probably be pretty surprised at how easy it is to find modems that are accessible, that generally don't have much of a security mechanism in place, and you can get backdoor access into that authorized modem connection and into the data network and exploit it. Been around for a long time. There's not been a really good solution. The solution up to this point has been war dialing. Many, many organizations have their dedicated war dialing team. You'd be surprised at how big some of those teams are. I've been really surprised here recently at some of the operations we've seen, where folks are just dialing lots of phone numbers on a routine basis trying to find those modem connections. What's interesting is a lot of times data security folks tend to not get too excited about the authorized modem connections, the assumption being that someone authorized them, therefore they're probably relatively secure. The reality is that's not, you can't be real confident of that. That's a tough question to answer. The other type of modem connection that usually gets the attention of the security practitioner much more directly is that old rogue modem, unauthorized modem connections that the employee brings in and intentionally, surreptitiously connects a modem up to the laptop or to their desktop computer, connects that to their phone line, the intent of which is to make an outbound modem call into the public switch telephone net to an internet service provider to get a private data network connection to that world. What a lot of folks tend to overlook is that while that IP address is real, established within that internet service provider, that's a valid IP address that can be scanned across and exploited back into the internal data network. The question here becomes, well, okay, how serious is that? Because there probably aren't that many outbound modem calls occurring to internet service provider phone numbers, and they probably don't stay online too long anyway. And one of the things that telecom firewall technology has shown, it's a technology I'll show you how it works here in a minute, you can put on the network there, and folks that do that are usually very surprised at the number of outbound modem calls is very large, and they stay online 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 hours a day. On occasion, you know, you actually see Monday morning to Friday nights, which is kind of bizarre. And why they don't go over the weekend, I don't know, but they're there in very, very large numbers. So this is a method of exploiting that unauthorized modem connection that's quite real and a serious security concern. Usually what security folks get most focused on is the scenario where when that employee goes home, and also I want to make the point, by the way, this is not an analog line issue. You can do this over any PBX, digital PBX line with a little Linestein and a couple of other little products out there I can insert into that phone network to get an analog connection from my analog modem. In fact, a couple of the recent modem, some of the more popular modem manufacturers, I believe, provide the Linestein function as part of the modem now, which is kind of interesting. And there's only one place in the world that you really use that, and that's at work if you have a PBX. I find that very interesting. But usually what most people think about when they think about modem connections is war dialing, the classic thing you saw in war games, and every hacker movie out there, Sneakers and everybody, uses the old war dialing game here as a point of access. The reason why they do that is it's a very viable method to get totally clandestine access into a data network, go inside a server environment, set up some bogus accounts, punch a hole through the firewall, back out of that modem connection, and then come back into the data network for your exploitation activity over some period of time. Somebody discovers you, knock it out, get your accounts cleaned out, And then the person who wants unauthorized access just does some more war dialing and finds another modem connection. If you go back and take a look at some of the events that have been reported in the press over the years, this is a classic scenario when Citigroup got hacked by the Russian hackers. Recently, there's some big ones. I don't know if they've all made the press within the financial community. This is a fundamental data network security issue that anyone in that business probably needs to take a hard look at. Now, the telecom firewall technology was actually developed initially to address that basic issue. What a telecom firewall does is it electrically sits in front of the PBX you see down there on the bottom line, which is your green TDM traditional phone network environment. And a telecom firewall sits electrically in front of a PBX, just like a firewall sits in front of your data network environment. And it essentially logs all call progress information into and out of the organization, captures that information, communicates that up through a triple DES encrypted, or ideally some kind of a VPN connection back to a server there, to log all that information and actually enforce policy. So you can now allow or disallow certain behaviors on the phone network just the way you do a firewall on the data network. Here's the core functionality of a telecom firewall. Now, this technology is doing this independent of the PBX. And the reason for that is having something that works with PBXs is problematic. There are over 20 PBX vendors still on the market today. And all of them have at least two, and many of them have three legacy product lines in the marketplace. Most of those are locally managed point product proprietary operating system environments. From the same vendor, you'll have two generations or three generations that literally have an entirely different operating system environment. So for an enterprise trying to somehow manage this in some systematic way, it's very, very difficult. Some of the later PBXs that started hitting the market 3 or 4 years ago were IP-enabled. You'd have an ability to pull records down through an IP connection, VPN and stuff. But the reality is not a lot of people bought many of those, right? Because they're all now waiting for voice over IP. The promise of voice over IP definitely slowed all that activity. So here's what a telecom firewall does. Is as it's sitting on the network, it's basically reading the TDM packets, the TDM stream, much in the same way as a deep packet inspector is going to do on an IP connection. It's going to look at all of the signaling and the actual content data in that TDM stream, and it needs to do three things. First thing it does is log all call progress information enterprise-wide, real-time, back to a central server, or maybe a set of hierarchically staged servers. For every phone call that occurs throughout the enterprise, if you're going to get a handle on this, you need to have an ability with a telecom firewall such that if anyone picks up a phone inside the enterprise and makes a phone call to anyone else, anywhere in the world, or any phone call coming in, I want to be able to log the source phone number, the destination phone number, the time of the call, duration of the call, and other information associated with call progress, enterprise-wide, real-time. I should be able to sit here and watch that occur across the screen. That's not rocket science. And today, you simply cannot do that without a telecom firewall. There's not another technology out there that does that. Now, you can, if you go talk to PBX managers, all of them will tell you, I have a call accounting package on this system, and I have call accounting packages on this system. And that is true. This is exactly what those call accounting packages do to some degree. The big difference is they generally, well, they don't do it enterprise-wide real-time. They are PBX dependent, so you have different versions of different ones. The expenses is often, somewhat high, as you would expect with a proprietary type implementations like that. So traditionally, pulling together call progress information on an enterprise scale has never really been done. Telecom firewalls enable you to do that. The second thing you need in a telecom firewall, if you're going to solve this unauthorized modem problem, is an ability to characterize call type during the duration of that call. So I need to be tell if every one of those phone calls, if it's voice traffic, fax traffic, modem traffic, video teleconferencing traffic, or probably federal customers are going to want to know about secure telephone units, right? And you might have other types of traffic on that phone network that evolve in the next few years that I want to be able to see, or new changes in the signaling environment. So a telecom firewall should allow you to create signatures and or to grab this kind of information enterprise-wide real-time. Third ability is you need some policy enforcement mechanism. And in the phone world, it's a pretty straightforward thing. If there's something on the line you don't like, a telecom firewall could basically elegantly kill that phone call. communicate with both ends to say hang up, go on hook. Okay, so that's your policy enforcement mechanism. So what a telecom firewall does to solve that unauthorized modem problem is pretty straightforward. It allows you for the first time to sit in front of a rule base that probably looks a lot like other IP firewalls out there. And allow me, the difference being is instead of IP addresses, you're dealing with phone numbers. Instead of TCP services, you're dealing with things like source phone number, destination phone number, time of the call, duration, and stuff like that. And I want to be able to enforce a policy on all of that. So with a telecom firewall in place, I now, for the first time, can sit back with a centrally managed rule base and set up a rule base by group of phone numbers, subgroup of phone numbers, or individual phone number to either allow or disallow modem traffic on any given line. And I'll tell you right now, for folks who think the old phone network EDI environment is passe, you're wrong. I mean, that is a large part of our business infrastructure these days. There are many, many calls placed every day over modems communicating vital business information up the chain over that public switch telephone network. So with this technology, I can now allow some of those real-time communications needs to occur and prevent that on all the other phone lines. So let's say you're a hot sysadmin person and you just got to have remote access into your Sun workstation sitting there in your lab to help keep that network running in case things go down. You could actually set up a source destination pair between that system that you need access to and your home phone number. So if someone is war dotting looking for that key server or that system that they want access to, it'll take a look at the phone number that's calling in, and if it's not according to policy, it will simply not allow the call to occur. It'll drop the call. And yet, for those authorized modem connections, it will allow it to happen. Same thing that you see going on in the IP network. As folks are starting to deploy telecom firewalls, the implications of this to the efficiency of their business operations is really pretty dramatic. They see opportunity to institute a lot of things here on the voice side of the house. So, let me give another perspective on that. One of the issues that the security community has always tried to deal with, and that's the world I come from. I've spent many years back in my old Air Force days and since working with folks trying to characterize and quantify my real requirements for security and to build budget. To go to the executive staff and other players, because this is usually a pretty big corporate issue these days, and justify my security program. And here's the kinds of technologies I want to buy and the staff that I need and things like that. A really big issue. What's interesting about telecom firewalls is it will characterize and quantify your usage of the phone network to a degree that you've never seen before. And you can sit back and say things like, how many T1 trunks do I have in my Dallas office? Well, I have 17. And I have 12 PRIs. What's the peak utilization rate on that trunk infrastructure? Well, you're running about a 48% peak utilization rate. And for you, those of you in the phone business know, that's probably pretty low, and I could save a lot of money on that phone bill just by identifying that requirement. And by the way, I have 127 analog lines no one knew we had, because analog lines are often bought departmentally, out of local budgets, and no one keeps track of that. Well, a telecom firewall technology deployment, interestingly, as you deploy it, saves more money on its deployment than it costs to deploy. And a lot of folks are looking at using that money back over on the data security side of the house for a budget there. So at any rate, that's the basis, the basic telecom firewall technology. Another interesting development, as you will see, in fact, I think you're going to see a sneak peek of one of the first products of this type in the upcoming Network Computing magazine. Is basically a product designed to solve this eavesdropping issue on the public switch telephone network. Wouldn't it be interesting if I could, in fact, encrypt all of my phone calls for the enterprise to anyone else in the enterprise? I pick up a phone and call someone in the Dallas office. It'd be interesting if I could just have that automatically encrypted without me even knowing about it. And that's what circuit switch VPNs do. If you get a telecom firewall technology deployed out there, for across all your voice infrastructure for the enterprise, well, you could actually use that technology, if it's designed the right way, to support basically a telecom firewall technology or a circuit switch VPN technology to essentially encrypt that voice call from one end to the other, transparent to the user. Those of you here from NSA might recognize this as the NSA Grayphone architecture. The obvious issue there is you want to do it much cheaper than, say, NSA did with the Grayphone architecture. And circuit switch VPNs are going to be a really significant security capability for your legacy voice environment. Now we come to voice over IP. Okay, now I went through all this dialogue because it appears that telecom firewall technologies will have some very large implications for voice over IP security. In fact, if you look at the campus level voice over IP environment, a lot of folks are beginning to discuss the security issues there. And what I'm proposing here is that when you look at the four fundamental issues associated with voice services from a vulnerability perspective, that most of these increase in risk fairly dramatically over your legacy TDM network. And we'll talk about each one of these as we go through. First of all, in a campus level voice over IP environment, here's the fundamental issue. If you look at the inherited IP vulnerabilities that exist out there in your IP network, it's pretty substantial. That's why we're all here. I mean, we're all trying to solve a lot of these data network vulnerability issues, both on the network side of the house, the host side, and you can sit there and debate all day long about where the majority of this work is going to be done. Like IDS is probably going to move from the network layer or network area itself more and more into the host environment and things like that. But bottom line is, we're doing all of that work because there are some fundamental structural issues security-wise in those environments. If you look at how some of those translate directly into issues for the voice over IP world, you could easily make an argument for these kinds of things. There are a lot of concerns associated with voice over IP from a service perspective. You've seen some of the early, in fact, page down here, you saw one of the early specifically developed voice over IP exploitation tools, a little tool called Vomit that hit the world about 3 years ago. It wasn't that big of an event because there aren't very many voice, back then there were very few voice over IP phones out there as well as call server environments. But that was an example of the first tool designed to exploit that. Now, here's a thought for you, and we can argue this and discuss this if you like, but a lot of folks are very concerned about our move to the voice over IP arena from a security perspective for a really pretty fundamental reason. If you think about the larger hacker community, and you know, that's a community that has done a lot of interesting things to stimulate the growth of security technologies and awareness in those issues. And there's a pretty small subset of that community that focuses on the phreaking side of the house, basically exploiting the legacy voice network infrastructure, PBXs and things like that. Now, many folks in that community leverage those capabilities on a pretty regular basis, but there's a pretty small group that specializes in that because you have to learn the operating systems of many different phone switch environments. Lots of different PBXs out there to mess with. So it's not something that attracts the attention of a lot of that community to specialize in and to really exploit on a large scale. And still, we're experiencing about $12 billion worth of toll fraud a year in our U.S. businesses. Well, the notion is, as your voice over IP infrastructure or your voice service moves increasingly over to an IP environment, the notion is that larger community of IP expertise that's focused on the hacker side of things, if you want to phrase it that way, is probably going to move their interest over to the new voice environment. It'll become a target-rich environment. And now, in one fell swoop, you can have an impact on both voice and traditional data services. So the assumption is, even in a campus-level voice over IP environment, you have some big issues. If you'll take a look at this, here's our view of the data network on the top and the phone network on the bottom there in green. And of course, the whole point of campus level voice over IP is to change some of those green side of the house phones there into IP phones. Okay? We're going to install a lot of IP phones, get rid of some of my traditional TDM phones. And of course, with those IP phones comes a call server environment of some type. All right? And that may involve an IP PBX itself or an IP enabled PBX, depending on which vendor you're getting products from. But there will be some kind of an IP-based environment for management of the signaling activity and as well as the phone calls. Now, if you experience some attempt to exploit that, whether it comes from the outside or from the inside, if the perpetrator actually gets hold of your call server environment, they can have some pretty significant effects on your ability to communicate through voice and or exploit that activity. Now, what's interesting is, it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds. The traditional focus of the exploitation of voice services has been to get access to free phone calls. not to crash that voice service. But basically, if someone targets your voice over IP environment, they're going to do one of two things, denial of service, or some kind of longer-term exploitation, probably for toll fraud. They can certainly eavesdrop much easier, or at least if you haven't set up right, it's a little easier to eavesdrop in that environment. But the point is, whatever happens in that voice over IP deployment, the actual phone calls themselves, when it hits that IP PBX gateway environment, is actually going to exit that facility as a TDM call. That's what, you know, that's what the gateways do. We're incurring this additional risk for voice over IP in the campus environment, but the calls still go out TDM. So if you do have a telecom firewall sitting out there, as the calls exit or come into your environment, that telecom firewall mitigates the risks associated with service theft pretty dramatically. It detects toll fraud and blocks unauthorized activity just the way it does in any other legacy originated phone call. Now, it won't do much for you to mitigate the risk associated with the call server environment itself. That's obviously an IP vulnerability-based issue set. You will see, there's a lot of discussion out there right now, as I've shown here, of some capability to protect against exploitation with real-time media firewalls on the IP side of the house. To be able to gather that signaling information enterprise-wide real-time, to look at that, bounce it against a rule base, and enforce policy on the IP side of the house, and to assist in protecting that call server environment. Now, you know, I don't know what you think about the risk to your voice over IP systems, but it's interesting when you look at the various vendors out there, you know, Cisco and Avaya and Siemens. I mean, everybody's got a product line now. There's a lot of guidance on how you set up those call server environments. Whatever the format is, they tell you very strongly to segment your network and to install a firewall to protect that basic call server environment, a special firewall there perhaps. And then they want you to segment your network, and then they want you to install some host-based intrusion detection stuff, and then they want you to segment your network, and then perhaps do some things at the network level to protect against some exploitation of voice packets, and then they want you to segment your network, right? And the whole point here is, as the services converge, everyone is very concerned about the opening up of your classic voice service to exploitation through the IP world. And I think that message should be coming through loud and clear. A lot of folks are starting to discuss now the nature of real-time media firewall technologies. And what does that really mean? The notion being is that your classic data network firewalls that really don't support real-time media and perhaps may not scale terribly fast, they ultimately are going to have to try and address this. But they're going to take on a real-time media function here that's got to be is going to be essential to dealing with voice services. You simply can't deal with a major delay in voice communications. So there's some scalability issues and some functions there that obviously have to be addressed by your firewall environment and other security technologies. I believe Cisco coined the phrase real-time media firewalls, and you'll see that discussion out there. Ultimately, so that's a short discussion about campus-level voice over IP environments. Now let's talk a little bit about the ultimate promise of voice over IP. Understand, I can deploy campus-level voice over IP environments, and after I sign my NDA, which I think is interesting, I buy a product from a vendor and they ask me to sign an NDA so I cannot talk about its shortcomings to the general public. I love that one. I've never been able to do that as a vendor, but certain vendors are able to do that in the voice over IP world. Very interesting. I think that's one of the reasons why you don't hear about a lot of the problems. The technology, though it has been problematic for the last few years, is definitely coming on board. It's improving pretty dramatically. It's becoming pretty serviceable. The feature set, voice is a very feature-rich service, and the feature set in the voice over IP arena is probably coming along. It has a ways to go, but it is definitely becoming an impact. So the move to deployment of campus-level voice over IP environments is pretty dramatic. There are very few organizations that are actually running an IP trunk into that voice over IP campus environment so that my phone calls go out of the enterprise in an IP format. And understand, when that happens, that's where you get about 80 to 90% of the benefit of voice over IP. The campus-level deployments you have right now just get you some really cool-looking phones and some other nice services on your side of the house there. But it also introduces a whole new PBX environment for your voice guys or gals, right? And I don't know what's happening in your organization, but we see an increasing number of data folks who have got all excited about deploying voice over IP technology, and they get out there and start messing with it, and after about 6 months they go, okay, I give up. Voice is a little more complicated service than I thought, and you know, I'm up to my ears in just keeping the data network going, so why don't you guys take it? And a lot of those projects are being handed back over to the voice folks. And so they're learning about a lot of the issues. Understand, with all of the activity on voice over IP, and here's another perspective, and we can argue this, here's your legacy voice TDM infrastructure. Enterprise, carrier, PBXs, carrier switches, there it is. Here's your voice over IP infrastructure, okay? You ship a million phones, that's cool. You got several billion phones out here, okay? There's a big radical change coming to the way we use voice inside the enterprise, much less doing it within the carrier. So what we're gonna talk now about is the vulnerability issues for the enterprise once you connect up that IP pipe to the carrier for voice services. And we're gonna talk about dedicated voice over IP trunks initially, but the same issues occur for, you know, data pipes that serve both data and voice. Essentially what's happening is when I put in that IP trunk, I'm essentially opening up for voice, pardon me. I get rid of my T1, change the format to an IP format, okay? And I'm gonna use that to pipe my voice out of the enterprise. Understand, I'm showing it right here. As soon as I do that, I've opened up a new front door to my data network. So either my classic data network environment needs to address that, or I need something else to address that vulnerability issue I have there. In addition, I'm still gonna have for the next decade or two, a very interesting mix of 20 PBX vendors, and now five or six IP vendors, IP PBX, voice over IP vendors, and the notion of standard systems and environments is not taking hold, really. We talked about it, but that's not happening. Everybody has their own proprietary thing in the voice over IP world. So now my voice world is opening up to a whole new set of additional vendors with new voice issues. And I'm inheriting that voice over IP vulnerability set. And the folks who are probably going to exploit this environment in the longer term have yet to really turn their attention in this direction. They've been having too much fun and pretty busy on the classic data network. Okay, and as those data environments are becoming increasingly secure, by locking down those connections with voice over IP firewalls and VPNs and IDSs and things like that, there's a really interesting increase in war dialing and exploitation of modem connections back into that data network to bypass all of that. And it's really easy to do. Anyone in the business out there who does security consulting and does not do war dialing against your environment and does not routinely break into your environment, is doing you a disservice, okay? Because it's very easy to do. Well now, once I get ready to really move into voice over IP and grab a hold of those other new 40 new services, integration of my instant messaging and email and voice services and all this really cool stuff, I gotta put an IP trunk there for my voice service in some form or fashion. And I still have, all those green lines there are still there for a long time to come, for at least the next decade or two. So I need some way of dealing with that. Well, I think what you're gonna see is two approaches to that. One is I could have my IP firewall take on that task, look at the scalability issues there and things like that, and they may in fact do that. You'll also probably see an evolution of the telecom firewall technology that's pretty new on the market, but being really pretty aggressively received, just like data firewalls were in the early days. That could easily, basically, for that voice telecom firewall, all you need is an IP blade and a little other software to do all the real-time media work for the voice service. The telecom firewall is already a real-time media firewall. In the TDM world, it has to be a real-time media firewall and very scalable. And of course, obviously, if you're gonna do this, it has to be an enterprise-wide real-time kind of capability to add the value you need. So you're gonna see real-time media firewalls be used to address IP trunking in this arena. Clearly, when you start digging into voice over IP and the issues with some dedicated IP bandwidth, not necessarily individual lines, but some bandwidth dedicated to voice services, it raises a lot of security issues that you need to think through. Okay, so if that is in fact a reasonable portrayal of what may be occurring out there, and of course we can entitle your opinions on that, but I think there's a lot of accurate information here, then what do? I mean, do you just not do voice over IP or what? And what we see happening in the market is everyone, if you talk to the phone practitioner, voice practitioner out there in the field, every one of them have been told to come up with a voice over IP migration strategy. And so have the data folks. In fact, it's interesting that the data networking people are actively looking for a voice over IP migration strategy. And the reason is they really want voice over IP. Why? Because it's cool stuff, it's the way of the future, and they ultimately think they're going to own it. Okay, that's cool stuff. The voice guys are very different. The voice guys still have all the budget for voice generally. And voice over IP projects often come out of a data network environment budget as a project initially. And the voice guys are too actively looking for a voice over IP migration strategy because they've been told to do so. The difference is they're not really excited about getting voice over IP in there because it really creates a lot of headaches for them. And it's the other thing is it's sort of cool stuff, it's the wave of the future, and they think they're not gonna own it. That's what the mindset has been for the last 2 or 3 years. So a lot of voice over IP projects have been held up in a lot of enterprises because there's this very conflicting view between the traditional voice guys and the data guys as to what's important and what's not. What's interesting is clearly the enterprise needs to figure out how are we going to march towards this ultimately converged environment. And it's going to be a wild mix for many, many years to come. Well, here's a notion here. Very straightforward. Is to first of all take a look at your legacy voice infrastructure. You have fundamental data network security issues today that telecom firewalls solve. So the notion is it makes sense to at least examine what that technology is, what it means, and how it works. And with that technology is something that fits, one of the benefits is it actually secures your legacy voice infrastructure today. You have big security issues. It secures that environment today. Both the PBX voicemail systems, it protects the backdoor into your data network, a lot of interesting stuff, detection of toll fraud, things like that. It also essentially sort of IP enables that legacy voice network. You've got a device out there that does a lot of real-time digital signal processing on the voice network and feeds its findings through an encrypted VPN connection back to a central server. So I'm getting visibility and control over my legacy voice environment, and it pays for itself, okay? It allows you to do some interesting things for troubleshooting your voice network. Folks that get into voice over IP, you're going to find out, you know, setting up your call plan and other things like that is and the use of your various infrastructure out there efficiently is a non-trivial exercise. It takes you a lot of time and effort. Telecom firewalls automate visibility into a lot of that. For example, imagine sitting back here as an enterprise. You know, let's say you've got 120,000 employees worldwide, and you'd like to know how many trunks do I have in my San Francisco office, and you know, there they are. And when one of my 14 PRI lines goes down, I'd like to know about it. Usually the only way you find out about those things is the phone, you'll have customers, users calling up saying, hey, I'm getting busy signals all the time. I can't get calls in or out. And I might find that I've lost 4 or 6 of my 12 PRI connections out there that were running in, let's say they were running efficiently, 85, 90% peak utilization rate, and I've lost those. And they'll be down for 3 days and no one will even know until finally you've lost so many calls, it's unreal. Well, telecom firewall will give you the status of that trunk worldwide, real time, right back here. So be sitting at dinner and say, well, I just lost 3 T1s in my Bangkok office. There it is. Okay. Or I have noise problems. Because you can instrument on noise, frame slippage, things like that, on your legacy voice network. Those are the kinds of things the telecom firewall does for you. And you know, the notion is your voice network is a fundamental requirement to business. A lot of argument about which one's more important now. Bottom line is they're both pretty darn important. And they need to be up and operational. That's what a telecom firewall does for you, is helps bring sort of some of the same principles that we've used on the data networking side of the house, some visibility controls, some remote management stuff, over to the legacy voice network that's not been that easy to do in the past. Once you get that in place, and the other big issue is if you go out to, let's say go to Cisco's site, you're examining voice over IP. Go out to Cisco's site, I believe it's still there. It wasn't up to a few months ago. I'm sure it's still there. They have a very thick guideline on planning your migration to voice over IP. It's actually a really insightful document. They got a lot of good stuff in there. And one of the first things they tell you to do is to go out and characterize and quantify your legacy voice environment. write down the PBX type, trunk infrastructure, take a look at your call detail records for a couple of months, try and figure out what your real voice requirements are, and use that information to assist while you're doing the assessment on the data network side what your migration strategy is. Well, telecom firewalls, when they're in place, they automate all that. Enterprise-wide, real-time, you see it all. Okay. Very powerful. Then, institute, and we highly encourage folks to look at deployment of some campus-level voice over IP. If you haven't done it yet, you owe it to yourself to deploy some of that technology and get some experience with it and see what you're up against. One, the technology has improved dramatically in the last 2 years. It actually, you know, it's been sounding real good for a long time. The voice quality, the quality of service, reliability and things like that is actually also dramatically improved. Sorry about that. And that telecom firewall that sits out there will basically gather a lot of that information and allow you to plan your migration to an ultimately converged environment very, very efficiently. When you put that voice over IP campus-level deployment out there in one of your offices, let's say you do two or three offices with different teams out there, you can actually monitor the effectiveness and the change in call patterns when you do the switchover, because you're sitting on the same trunk infrastructure, and you switch over, you're using the same trunk infrastructure, the same T1s and ISDNs with a new IP back into it, you can still watch all that call traffic and see how it changes. Is it really working as good? You get a real-time visibility control into the actual transition phase. And ultimately, you're going to see a lot of data that's going to be invaluable in planning the ultimate move to a full, darn near full, I guess that's the best way of saying it, IP environment over some period of time. Ultimately, security is going to be a fundamental issue to the voice service just as much as it is in the data network world. And in fact, you know, there's still arguments that it is perhaps more important because some of the issues associated with 911 and things like that. The telecom firewall is going to allow you to get visibility and control that migration and institute security, and also act as a platform with which to launch additional security mechanisms like circuit switched VPNs. You're going to see a lot of discussion here pretty soon about telecom IDS, intrusion detection systems on the legacy voice network environment for real-time detection and prevention of toll fraud, not just reporting on it, but stopping it in its tracks. And what's interesting is a lot of those things are, in some ways, once the infrastructure is out there, easier to do. IDS in the legacy voice world is a lot easier and more straightforward than IDS in the data world. So that's essentially telecom firewall technology and what it means, we think, to the voice over IP world. Essentially, you have a legacy voice network out there that needs to be IP enabled to get some visibility and control over the old voice service and figure out how do you move into ultimately an IP environment longer term. A lot of discussions as to how that's going to happen. Telecom firewalls secure the last big back door into your data network. The modem connectivity is extensive, very difficult to get a handle on. You hire somebody to do some more dialing, now ask them what percentage of the 450 modems you found, what is the percentage of that of my total? And they cannot tell you without a telecom firewall deployed. You simply can't see the number of outbound modem calls that occur by doing more dialing. It saves time, money, and sets you up to do a real assessment of migration to the ultimate conversion environment. That's the conclusion of what I had to talk about today. Be glad to answer any other questions if you have any. Any questions? Yes, ma'am.
Do you know if there are any open source projects for this?
Telecom firewall technology has been on the market for about 3 years. A good source to just get an initial perspective on it is there was an article published, and you know, I normally say this up front, I forgot to say this, SecureLogix builds one. I'm up here trying not to talk about our product specifically, but they did do an evaluation of our product in the November 2002 issue, one of those, I forget which date it was. They've been writing a lot about that, and you're gonna see a lot more about circuit switch VPNs from them and whatnot. It looks like they're getting pretty excited about what this technology means to the enterprise. So, and there's lots of reference customers out there. There are two vendors in this space. There's another company up in Canada called Sentry Telecom, S-E-N-T-R-Y. We think there's gonna be more. Any other questions?
Yeah. Oh, yes, sir.
That's what you're going to want to see, is clearly if I have my telecom firewall deployed out there, I want to have an IP blade, obviously, that you just pop into that same chassis ideally. Try not to talk about specific products, but yeah. Any other questions? Yes, sir. Right. That's correct. Sure. What you would have to have is clearly to do the encryption, you would have to have a telecom firewall platform at each location. You also obviously want to be able to make phone calls outside of that environment that are not encrypted. So essentially, you'll need a per call encryption scheme, so that it'll get ready to place the call and say, ah, this is a call going to another ETM platform. Ah, this ETM platform is part of my neighborhood. Boom, do an encryption, set up an encryption mechanism, then place the call. I mean, that technology is operational right now. You'll see the first commercial product on the market in about 2-3 months. And in fact, there's a sneak peek, supposedly, coming out in Network Computing Magazine sometime in the next couple, 3 months about that technology. I don't know what they're going to say about it, but they said they're interested in doing a sneak peek, and they looked at it. So we think it's a very powerful technology. How many of in here are familiar with SCADA systems? A few folks in SCADA. A really hot issue these days from a security perspective. Systems, communications, and data acquisition, SCADA, are basically control devices that, for example, you'll have switches out there that electronically change your railroad switches, gathering data, changing the frequencies on air traffic control radars worldwide is an interesting scenario. The big valves for water on dams, your power grid, big rheostats out there that change the voltage and things like that. Most of those are controlled by SCADA environments. About 70, 80, 90%, nobody really knows, of that SCADA environment is wireline-based, basic dial-up wireline connections. And you'll hear everybody talk about SCADA issues, worried about going through the internet to get to a SCADA control system. The reality is there's two ways to get to that SCADA control system. One is to get to a PC through the internet that's on someone's local area network that actually has the actual SCADA control software that controls many SCADA devices out there. If I get into that PC, I own it all. Okay. But what that PC does generally is it has a little modem pool sitting right there where it dials out over the public switch telephone network to actually connect with the control device itself. Valves on oil refineries. Okay. Some of the control devices on grain elevators, okay, things like that. You name it, the environmentals in this building in all likelihood are controlled to that environment, probably by some 16-year-old kid that got a little contract with somebody and he's got some PC SCADA control software. And it's a very fractional, it's not a clear market, okay? Siemens Corporation owns about 40% of the SCADA control device market itself. And there's many, many variations. And the rest of the 60% of that market is participated in by about 60 vendors. Everybody makes a SCADA control device. But the one thing that's common to most of them is their wireline dial-up. So if I can't get into the PC to control a bunch of them, if I know the phone numbers to dial, I can do it directly. And there's almost no security out there on those mechanisms. And that's a big national security issue. Most corporations have their own SCADA environments that they need to worry about. Energy community in particular has a lot of that. Railroad, communications, airlines, I mean, you name it. So you're going to see a discussion about the application of telecom firewalls to SCADA environments as well in the coming months. Big issue. Did I answer your question at all?
Well, I guess my question was really, it seems like a lot of infrastructure for relatively small benefit.
Well, you mean for the encryption piece?
Yes.
Well, it would depend on the price, wouldn't it?
And what you'll find is, with telecom firewalls, why they're significant, and I'm not trying to do a sales pitch here, okay? If you're interested, you can call our salespeople, and be glad to give you a sales pitch. But what we're finding is that the cost savings on the telecommunications side of the house, the product does two things. It protects backdoor against attacks against the data network and SCADA systems, okay, and things like that, but mainly the backdoor of the data network. It also protects the PBX and voicemail system itself. $12 billion worth of toll fraud. The toll fraud alone in several organizations has justified its purchase. So you get the telecom firewall platform out there. Now, if the platform is designed such that it has a lot of excess processing capacity, it's expandable, put a little few other cards in there, it's remotely manageable, upload all the software from a central server. If it's architected correctly, if it's really remotely manageable, you know, and there's a lot of people claiming remote management out there, in this world, you won't survive unless it's really remotely manageable. If all of that is done properly, and the cost of getting the platform out there for the telecom firewall technology is justifiable through the value proposition set that you get, you now got a bump on the wire out there, an intelligent networking device on the edge of your enterprise voice infrastructure. Think about that, huh? Right? I mean, you got an intelligent networking device for the first time on that TDM network that's remotely manageable through encrypted, you know, VPN. So you're sort of IP enabling that environment. If I design it right, I should be able to upload at very low cost an encryption mechanism in there, punch a little card in there, does the encryption, and then upload the software to allow me to now encrypt that phone calls as an add-on benefit that's pretty darn low cost. So yeah, you bring up a valid point. If it costs very much, obviously this won't go anywhere. So strategically, what you want to do is make sure that the product pays for itself. I'll venture to say, and I've been in the data security business for a lot of years, and it's very hard to point out data network security products that actually bring a positive, very tangible ROI. Telecom firewalls are interesting. If you do it right, you can see over the coming months a reduction of 5, 10, 15, 20, 30% in your phone bill. Really tangible cost savings that the CFOs generally appreciate. So, you know, everyone assumes the phone bill, you know, voice is cheap. It's really not. It's a pretty big chunk of your bill to the company every day, especially when you throw in all the misuse, toll fraud and things like that. It's a big issue. Yes, sir.
What do you think is the relationship between the deployment of voice over IP and IPv6?
Well, obviously, it's going to bring a lot of benefits.
Are they necessarily correlated together? Could you deploy voice over IP on the existing IPv4 infrastructure?
A lot of people are doing that. I think IPv6 is obviously going to bring some improvements in or some reduction in the risk associated with voice over IP over the network. But what we've seen is right now the discussion about voice over IP and its deployment is I don't see a lot of discussion from a really rational position either way. It's a very emotional dialogue right now. You have a voice service that works pretty darn good. You know, you have the switch out there, you paid for it 7 years ago, it's got another 10 or 15 years on its life. It's a pretty big switch environment, and yet I want to go to voice over IP, so I start trying to justify a lot more infrastructure for voice over IP and going through all the issues there, plus security. And people are doing that no matter what. And they've been doing it for 5 years now. And a lot of the security issues have been essentially overlooked and will continue to be overlooked for the next, in my opinion, couple of years. But in about 2 years, as the target set gets large enough out there, there's going to be some really interesting events associated with the voice service that's going to, I think, prompt it's already slowing down a little bit. I mean, some of the voice over IP activity out there, assessments, security is, which last year was not even a concern, is now ramping up to almost as important as the operational, or as the ROI discussion. I don't think IPv6 is going to have a huge impact in the next 2 or 3 years. The discussion about that is going to have a huge impact on the voice over IP deployments that are going on over the next 2 years. Because it's just now starting to sink in with the implications of that, of the voice service on the IP environment is just now sinking in from a security perspective. But I think in 2 or 3 years, it's going to be a really fundamental issue. Some of those security issues are going to have to be solved in a pretty robust way
for voice over IP to really take off. And the carriers, see, voice over IP is not going to become really take off until the carriers provide you a secure IP connection for voice. That's what a lot of people think. Because the security risks associated with bringing in that IP trunk and with all the other issues that, the data network people are dealing with, the last thing they want to do is mess with this when they can still pick up the phone and, you know, they get a dial tone every time. It just, so most of the activity out there is pretty experimental. A lot of that people evaluating it, which is good. Any other questions? Somebody? Oh, yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Do you see the line of trunk side speeds of the telecom cards going beyond those sequences?
Not for a long time. In if you look at most of the PBX environments that are out there, they're coming in as T1 connections. I mean, it's a very standard environment, and most of the voice over IP deployments are still leveraging that same trunk infrastructure. I mean, they're taking an IP pipe there, and they're still connecting it to a gateway which connects to those 17 T1s. And that's going to be the core architecture on the voice side for some time to come. There's still a big question as to when the enterprise is going to really start rolling out aggressively IP trunks. And obviously, when they start doing that, you're going to get some bigger pipes out there for the voice service. But not much of that yet. Yes, sir? Say that again? Yeah, I mean, you're raising a fundamental issue. The real issue is, how do I, right now there is a some capability to enforce usage or usage management on the PBX environment to keep people from calling certain 900 phone calls. You can call out the, you know, 127 PBX system administrators out there throughout the world and say, don't let people call this and call this and call this. So you can institute that in all the individual call plans. The reality is that's not done very well today, even in PBX environments. It's really hard to do. It's, people are busy, you know, they'll change it, someone else will come and change it back. So enforcing basic usage policy is problematic. I mean, you have somebody calling Aunt Nellie in Nebraska 4 hours a day, 6 days a week. You know, how do I deal with that? Well, what telecom firewalls do first is allows you to get visibility into that activity. You can generate reports very quickly that shows, you know, this person calling Aunt Nellie in Nebraska. Who the hell is in Nebraska? What's going on here? Why do I have phone calls going from my site here in Dallas to four locations in China after hours, right? Six nights a week. I mean, why is that going on? I actually get visibility. I can sit back here at corporate and just run reports and go, my golly, look at this. There's a lot of folks who think, and I'm one of those, that once voice over IP starts really taking hold, the ability to enforce that gets even more difficult because there's so many ways around that ability. That's going to increase the importance of a voice over IP firewall, pardon me, a real-time media firewall, pretty dramatically, because the exploitation of it, the assumption is exploitation in the form of toll fraud alone is going to increase dramatically. And that's usually an outside perpetrated thing or it's visible as an outside toll call. General misuse is also going to improve dramatically, increase dramatically. The ability to monitor, one of the big concerns is, this IBM event that just happened. It was over, we believe it was exploited by a voicemail system. You heard about it on NPR, and then we haven't heard anything since, where there was a conference call ongoing that routinely occurred between some the senior execs in IBM. And on this conference call, as usual, they were discussing some strategic issues, and one of the things that they were reaching consensus on was they need to export a lot of their jobs. A lot of the software development is going to go to India. I mean, they said all this. We have to do this to remain competitive. Well, someone recorded that and farmed that out to a lot of people. Carly Fiorina with HP, when they were buying Compaq, someone got into the voicemail system and captured her phone call that was, you know, some people said was semi-threatening and coercive to some of their shareholders, soliciting their support for the buy of Compaq. And that was a mess for about 4 days. Now, ultimately, they weathered it. But if she had used one or two other words on that phone call, right, if she had changed her phrasing a little bit, it would have been a whole different ballgame. People argue that Compaq wouldn't have been bought by HP. A major business move that may be bringing benefit to lots of ultimate customers, maybe, wouldn't happen because someone captured a voicemail system. And a lot of folks are asking, once that voicemail system is on a Windows NT server, or even a Linux environment, whatever, which is probably inherently easier to secure to some degree. But still, when it's on that kind of environment, what's the exploitation of that going to be? And a lot of folks are very, very concerned that it's going to become quite real. This is the very early days of this. I mean, the fact that you folks even came to this session, I was surprised at. Because the discussion about voice over IP and security and real-time media firewalls, real-time mixed media firewalls, and all of that is still relatively new. The only people involved in this are really, truly early adopter folks. Some pretty big organizations that you all know and love are heavily involved in it. But it's been a very quiet kind of effort to make sure the technology was, you know, sufficient to go large scale. And I think just the attendance here was an indicator of how many people are becoming increasingly concerned about this issue. I'll guarantee you next year, with some of the events that we see happening, if they make the press in particular, which I don't know if they will or not, some of the recent events in Wall Street and some other places, the awareness is going to get much hotter on this whole issue. Any other questions? I think we're out of time. Thank you very much.